You're listening to Redefining Energy. Your co-hosts from Berlin, Gerard Reed, and from London, Laurent Segalem.
Today on Redefining Energy, Gerard have titled the episode Blockchain, Big Tech, and 24/7 Green Electrons. But first, a word from our partner.
Akita Capital is a sustainable investment and asset development company headquartered in Hamburg in Germany. Akita Capital invests in real assets and clean energy and sustainable infrastructure on behalf of its clients.
Look, everybody wants to buy 24/7 green electrons, but until recently, it has proven quite difficult.
Actually, let's be clear, it's been next to impossible. Let's be clear. And there's so much, I was going to say something I shouldn't say, but let's say we need to have much more transparency in that market, because it's not enough to just buy kilowatt hours over the year and say I'm 100% renewable, because that's not the case. And actually, anyone who's buying power has to also take into the fact that there is intermittency in this system and that somebody has to pay for it.
Not only that, it's just people are buying green certificates and they just pile them up. And at the end of the year, they match all the green certificates they bought over the year, all the electrons they've consumed over the year, and by the stroke of magic, they go to their sustainability report, their ESG, and they say, we are 100% good boys, which is really far-fetched, to say the least.
Yeah, it's to say the least, And it's old world greenwashing, and it's just not helpful going forward.
So we've been complaining, but there are solutions, and that's one of the solutions we are bringing on the show. We have invited Simone Acomero, and is the CEO of a startup called FlexiDAO. And that startup is in charge of tracking and monitoring those famous green electrons, but they do it by the hour. And they've been recently financed by Google and Microsoft, and they are tracking those green electrons on blockchain. And that's, for me, revolutionary.
I agree with you, Laurent. And actually, I want to say one other thing. It is amazing that the Googles and the Microsoft are at the forefront of this movement, because you could argue that actually maybe they shouldn't. And maybe that the big dirty secret from these guys is suddenly they've become the big power users globally. They've come out of nowhere and that they should be ducking their heads and just saying nothing. But actually they're not. I respect to these guys. They're coming out and saying, yeah, we're big power users, but we're going to change the way we and other people buy this for the benefit of the world. I think it's pretty cool. I really do. And I don't say that off about tech business. It's easy to criticize them.
Let's bring on Simone, who's going to give us much more detail about those new technologies.
Simone, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Well, Simone, first question is, we're going to talk about 24/7 green electrons, but can you explain a bit what was the state of play before the work on granularity started?
Absolutely. We at FlexiDAO like to see the evolution of renewable energy, but more specifically procurement of renewable energies. We call the first one Generation Z, that more or less goes towards the late 90s until more or less 2010. That's when really the Greenhouse Gas Protocol was created and Scope 2 was launched. And in this first generation, Generation Z, we call it, there was only location-based. So essentially, what companies could do was to multiply their consumption with the average CO2 content of the grid where they were. This, of course, limits a lot the opportunity and the incentives for companies to act on what they buy and what they purchase. More or less around 2010, the concept of market-based was launched, and I believe, if I remember correctly, in 2015, it became operational. Market-based essentially allows companies to report what they buy, not what they consume based on where they are, which they cannot act on it, but by choosing what energy they buy, they can reduce their carbon footprint. But of course, it's impossible, physically impossible to track the electron, and the electricity gets blended together. So what market-based does, and you can also understand from the name, it's kind of mimicking the financial market where you create a commodity, an environmental commodity that companies can buy and can use to demonstrate that, yes, I bought a certain volume of renewable energy, and therefore I can discount the CO2 emissions from my physical reality. This was the market-based. All of this was possible because in the early 2000, between 2000 and 2010, the so-called energy certificates, which are this environmental commodity that I mentioned before, were created first in Europe and then were followed by IRE, so the international standard, and were followed by other standards in the US. Suddenly you had a change in protocol that creates this market-based mechanism that companies can purchase and declare that as reporting emissions. And at the same time, you had the instruments that allowed the market to function. The guarantees of origin in Europe, the RECs in the US, and IREC all over the world.
So that's very interesting. So what you're saying is that so there's this first generation of green certificate, which have different names, Europe, US, and so on. Can you describe a bit the digital architecture on which they are created? I guess there are registries, or how does it work?
Absolutely. The renewable energy certificate is created by an entity that is called issuing body. Essentially, the issuing body is an entity that usually is a public body that collects data from the smart meters and validates that data and creates a certificate. Once the certificate is issued, it's issued on a registry. So you have the issuing body and then you have the registry. The registry is where the certificate as a digital environmental commodity is recorded. Every certificate today represents 1 megawatt hour of electricity produced. And then these certificates are essentially issued on the registry by the issuing body on behalf of a producer. The producer then can transfer to its clients as a proof of delivering renewable energy. So the client receives the certificate, goes to the registry, it cancels the certificates, essentially it retires their certificate from the market. Nobody can use it anymore. And thanks to this retirement cancellation, it can declare a reduction in its carbon footprint.
Simone, just from my perspective, just so I'm clear, if I understand in the past, what we had was I would have a certain number of megawatt hours I needed, and then I would just match that with renewables. But actually, the issue I would assume going forward is that you're not matching that on a real-time basis. So it's a bit of a fab. Am I wrong in the way that I saw it in the past? And is that changing?
The topic is not rather whether it's real-time or not. This could be a bit misleading. What we as FlexiDAO, but many other entities, are advocating for is that market-based today ignores the physical reality and constraints behind the power market. So you create a market-based mechanism that ignores the constraints of the power market, which are essentially time and location. Markets are divided by zone or by node, depending on the country where you are, but there are physical geographical boundaries that you cannot trade electricity out of there. You need to be there. At the same time, electricity is always traded in 1 hour intervals, 15 minute intervals, as it gets closer to the actual consumption. What we are advocating is that by ignoring these constraints, you're allowing companies to buy the cheapest product, the cheapest certificate out there in the market, which many times does not lead or to having an impact on bringing online more renewable energy in the market where you are.
So what you're saying is, let's say I'm in Spain in May at 4 a.m, so there's no sun and the grid is probably a bit dirty, but then I'm going to buy through those registry a green certificate produced in Norway by a hydro 6 months before. And of course, I'm going to match it. But as you said, location and time doesn't make any sense, which is probably one of the reasons why the price of those green certificates was so low, because there was a bit of an oversupply. Or am I wrong thinking that it was a bit like this?
You explained it perfectly. Indeed, without any constraints, there's an oversupply in the market. Certain countries export all the guarantees of origin that they produce, mainly Norway, as you rightly said, which creates a lot of supply and very, very, very cheap certificates. And now it's changing a bit because there's more demand. But in the last few years, with 1 euro per megawatt hour, as a comparison, the market is at 50 or above. So for a very negligible price compared to the cost of power, you could claim to be zero carbon without having any incentive to invest in energy efficiency, in reducing your consumption, engaging with your local suppliers to build more renewables in the countries where you are. So it doesn't create the right incentives in today's market that is more evolved and more sophisticated than 10 years ago for companies to actually act and invest proper money in decarbonization, which is what we need to make the energy transition happen.
Yeah, because if we can get out of jail for 1 euro per megawatt hour, everybody's going to be pretty much clean. And was the situation the same in the US or it was a bit different?
The situation is the same all over the world. Because of conflicts between standards, usually trades among continents don't take place. But now with IREC, that is an international standard, we already also see international trades. So LATAM trading with the Emirates, for example, to make green steel, right?
Yeah, LATAM, yeah, that's ridiculous.
So how do you match then the load of an industrial player to the intermittent renewable of today, given that I would assume in the past, all the certificates that have been given out were basically hydro. And hydro is that, let's call it the flexible renewable that allows you to get that 24/7 matching. Do you have to go to storage? I mean, how do I do this? Just maybe explain that a little bit.
It's important to split the conversation. So your question is great, but first, I just want to make the point that what we've said so far, so hourly accounting with geographical boundaries, it's simply to get more accurate CO2 calculations. Like, we need to be aware that today we're using averages without restrictions. So many cases, the figures that companies report are misleading. First of all, what we advocate for is we have the means, thanks to smart meters, to be more accurate. Let's be more accurate. This needs to be the starting point. Then your question is more, okay, now that we are more accurate as a company, how can I be completely meshed when indeed only hydro is a base load that's predictable, et cetera, no? This is a great question. And there are multiple solutions for companies to do this. First of all, in the short term, we need to forget this mantra of being 100%. There's no grid that is 100% green on an hourly basis. The very same concept of being 100% is a marketing, because it's an easy, catchy marketing PR. Today, the objective cannot be being 100% green every hour, because indeed it's not economically viable and feasible. And it's also, there's no grid out there ever. But there's a lot of literature, a lot of evidence already that shows that 60, 70, 80% matching leads to more carbon avoidance than 100% match on an annual basis. And then indeed, you need more baseload carbon-free power, like geothermal, for example. You need storage. You need all these new technologies to also step up, become cheaper, so that it becomes feasible to achieve 100%. But unless the market incentivizes companies to look for this supply, this transition won't happen.
That's very interesting. So there are two aspects. The first is going to be the monitoring and the creation of those hourly certificates. And then we need to start with this. And then the second is going to be the monetization of, I guess, certain hours or certain location will have more value. Because if you put more sun in the south of Italy during July, the residual value of an additional green certificate is going to be low. But if you manage to produce some green electricity in the middle of a Dunkelflaute, that's the valuation. First, let's talk about the monitoring. How does your digital infrastructure around those hourly, probably with GPS or something, are we talking blockchain? Explain the monitoring, please.
Absolutely. Especially Europe, but also the US and other continents, the smart meter rollout is quite extant today. Certain countries are way past 90%. With smart meters, of course, it becomes the opportunity to collect data and to collect and exchange data in a very easy way via API, so remote interfaces. That's essentially what we do. We are developing integrations with grid operators that allow us to connect to smart meters. So we collect the production data of a production device, we collect the consumption data of a consumption device, and we match the two, where we see the, how much was produced in a given hour, how much was consumed in a given hour, and we match the two, depending on the supply contract that you have. So if I'm a big data center, I have a supply contract with a given energy supplier. So the supply contract says what kind of energy and from which assets I'm supposed to get the energy. We measure, we match the two, and we actually say, look, every hour you are 70% covered or 80 or 50. But essentially, the infrastructure is this. We collect the data and we do this matching, adding some analytics on top to calculate CO2, etc. On top of this, in order to ensure credibility and assurance that we are not assigning the same volume of energy twice to two companies, we use blockchain as kind of a digital notary that is decentralized, and every unit of energy gets recorded there. And we can create this kind of traceability where we show that every megawatt hour gets matched only to one company, so that everybody can audit our system and be 100% sure that we are not double counting. We are not using the same unit of electricity for two different companies, which would be gaming the system. So it's data collection and an algorithm that can optimize the matching between multiple assets. For some clients, we have up to 20, 25,000 sites in one country for which we do 24/7 matching every hour from 30, 50, 60 solar farms and wind farms. So there's data collection, an algorithm, and then blockchain that acts as digital notary underneath to ensure the credibility and the assurance of all the matching that we do.
Wow. You use a very important terms here, which is data centers. And of course, your relationship with Microsoft and Google has been well publicized. So can you explain what was their role in kind of defining those new concepts? Because I know both of those companies and others, you know, from big tech has been extremely proactive in, you know, developing carbon-free and or fully 100% net zero. Yes, please go on.
The 24/7 movement, we started pitching to investors and companies 24/7 and hourly traceability 5 years ago, the end of 2017. It was a bit early, I would say, but now we see that something is changing. But what really started to change is when Stanford Earth published a study that said 100% renewable does not mean zero carbon. That was the first time that a reliable, recognized academic player said something about this. Soon after that, Google published a paper called "The Internet is 24/7, Renewable Energy Should Be Too." And that was the second recognition. Actually, Google was one of the front runners, if not the front runner of this movement. It's true that at the same time, already there were service providers like us offering and pitching this, but that's really when the topic hit not the general public, but hit a bit more of the just very small niche that it was before. And from there, it started growing. After Google, Iron Mountain announced also a 24/7 target, Microsoft followed, and then the United Nations also created a new, it's called 24/7 Compact, which also brought interest from the US federal government, from cities. Now we have a coalition of cities, C40, that also have 24/7 targets. We have cities like Copenhagen, for example, that now wants to actually be a front runner in 24/7, but also Paris, New York, London, etc. It started with data centers. Data centers are still the most active. A lot, we have to be thankful to Google and Microsoft for spearheading the movement. But now we're way past data centers. It's not just a data center niche as it was perceived maybe a year and a half ago. Now it's government, cities, banks, manufacturers, food industry, automotive industry. More and more people are warming to the idea that we need to update how we count for carbon in order to be credible as an industry and really have an impact.
Can I just ask you, why did the data centers actually do this? And the reason I'm asking that is because they're the biggest power users in the world in terms of growth. It would be logical for them just to hide, but they've done the exact opposite.
We've been working with Google and Microsoft for more than a year now, and they're also investors of ours. They participated in our last Series A. We managed to see a bit now into their thinking, but essentially what you said is the main drive. They are a massive electricity consumer with a lot of projected growth. And in many times, we can already see from the news how the actual electricity procurement and public perception is hitting and hampering their growth. We see in Ireland that DSOs sometimes already blocking the construction of new data centers. We see communities in the Netherlands that are opposed to the construction of new data centers. So data centers realize that in order to make their growth sustainable and acceptable by the community, they had to do something more than what everybody else was doing to be accepted, to show it's true, I'm adding load, but much load I'm adding, I'm also building renewable for you and I'm doing the extra effort that it can actually is delivered. So I'm having impact in the local community. It's a way for them to ensure the growth that they plan and not being hit by other contingencies. So kind of it's a risk mitigation, it's a future risk mitigation strategy that they implement. And at the same time, we see many companies, Salesforce, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, they all start to offer cloud for sustainability. Now, every cloud user has a scope one, scope two, scope three accounting tools. They also see this as a way to offer new services to the market.
First, if I understand well, through your blockchain, the whole registry is kind of decentralized, no? You don't have like a central registry system. So that's one big innovation. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, because this is very new territory for me. So in order for those green certificates, which are hourly, to be able to represent an incentive, I would say, to produce green electricity where and when it's needed and not when and where it's convenient and, you know, letting the grid take care of it, that means that you need to think about having market pricing those electrons almost on an hourly basis. So explain me the monetization, because this will be embraced by financiers who will say, I know that I can incorporate the good green electrons versus, if I can say, the bad green electrons, and also will solve the problem of now having our markets with the crisis in Ukraine. The regulators want to split the fossil fuel market and the green market, creating two markets. And me, I'm saying probably rather than trying to split them, is add your hourly green certificates as plus or minus, and that would generate the value. I'm just talking.
No, it's very interesting. And actually, we as FlexiDAO were one of the early founders of a non-profit initiative called Energy Tag. That even by the name, the objective of this nonprofit coalition is to tag every megawatt hour of electricity that is sold on a wholesale market. Today, you buy a megawatt hour. And then after that, you buy the certificates. What Energy Tag says is that we need to blend these two systems and we need to start creating hourly prices for the certificate. So you need to price also the attribute of the electricity, not only the electricity itself. Of course, the market already prices how much renewable there is, no? Because when there's more solar and more wind, the prices are generally lower. However, you want to do the same also for the certificates. You want to add, create even more incentives. So you want to price scarcity. Again, at night, it cannot be as cheap as being green as it is at midday when there's a lot of solar. It doesn't make any sense. How this will actually play out, it's a very interesting question that there are a lot of people that are trying to figure out. First of all, right now, we need to create a system that accepts hourly certificates, that accepts the fact that we create hourly certificates on the blockchain and that companies can report on this. So we need to create the incentive framework around companies. Because now, as you said, I liked a lot what you said before. If I can pay €1 to get out of jail and be clean, I will always do that. So first of all, we need the incentives for companies to accept that maybe it's not €1, but maybe it's 5, maybe it's 6, or maybe it's even more. Once that happens, we'll have the right framework for the market to do its job. So to price demand and supply. But first of all, we need the framework. So what we are doing now is together with many different organizations and trade associations is to work on the framework that allows companies to care and be incentivized to adopt this new strategy. And then once there is, we'll be able to price accordingly, because then you will have many PPAs. PPAs are not 100% hourly matched. They never are. They're usually between 60 and 70%. So you have 30% of surplus that can go to a secondary market. Now you start having some price signals and more and more and more. And that's how you start adding until to the point where we'll, and that's our future vision, create a market where we can price hourly. We can assign a price to every hourly certificate. That's the long-term vision of the company.
Simone, can you share with me your vision where this whole Energy Tag FlexiDAO will be in 3-4 years' time?
Yes, it's 3-4 years time. The standard that companies use to calculate and report emissions will be different. Will require more constraints, as we were saying before, temporal and geographical. We'll see carbon reporting becoming mandatory, not voluntary. We are seeing this already from the SEC in the US, the new Corporate Social Responsibility Directive approved by the European Parliament and the Commission. So we'll have a carbon reporting market that has moved from voluntary to mandatory. We'll have more stringent targets on how the CO2 is calculated. And we'll see more and more that companies with low ranking in sustainability will have a higher cost of capital. This is already happening, a blend between the financial market and the environmental market, where the environmental market will affect and CO2 will effectively be kind of a liability for companies. This is where we see, and electricity, of course, plays a huge role in CO2 emissions for all the world, but especially for companies. So if you put all of this together, I expect that definitely granular certificates will be a commodity in 3-4 years from now in the energy sector, definitely. Hourly accounting will be becoming not for everybody, so not for households, but at least for top consumers, public listed, the way that they calculate their CO2 emissions, thinking again in this new framework where carbon accounting is mandatory and not voluntary anymore, and it affects your cost of capital.
Well, Simone, thank you so much for coming onto the show. Very informative, and you're on to something brilliant. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Laurent, it's great to have him on. It was a real eye-opener. What do you think?
Totally, because number one, we old guys, we tend to invite old guys who have the old thinking, and we totally miss the new technological developments. And I know there's been a lot of investment in climate tech in 2022, was a record year, and I'm extremely happy that such groundbreaking technologies are being developed. And when I look at all the regulators who are running like headless chickens, trying to apply last century thinking like price caps or market reforms along nodal pricing, and that flurry of regulatory activity only adds confusion in the minds of renewable developers. And here I see an extraordinary and practical solution to track and price the green electrons where they are made, when they are made.
Well, actually, what comes to my mind, Sari, when I look at the markets is who's it designed by? It's designed usually by economists. And there's a reason we call it the dismal science, because it is a dismal science. So I find it really refreshing to have guys that are in the market. In other words, I'm talking about the Microsofts and Googles and young innovators coming together and saying, we're going to do this in a different way. And we're not going to wait for you regulators. We're just going to do it and come up with a new platform, a new way of doing stuff. So I really like it. Really, it's super.
My message to Your Electric, Win Europe, Solar Power Europe and the European Commission, but also in the US and probably China, Japan, is look very carefully and thoroughly at this innovation of energy tags. For me, that's the 21st solution to pricing correctly the green electrons.
Agree totally with you.
And he was very honest. He said, look, 100% green, unless you're sitting next to a big hydro dam, it's not happening. You're going to have 60, 70%. But that's already extremely good.
And the vision is 24/7 carbon-free energy. And around that, I'd use the phrase granular certification. That's what's required, because we all in this market as finance guys, you also, we need to have trust in the certifications and the certificates around us. And I must admit, oftentimes, I don't have that trust.
And we've been trying to find some use for the blockchain. There's been a lot of hype and a lot of disappointments, but on this one, the blockchain looks pretty good.
I would just say it's a decentralized ledger, because blockchain is an old technology. And the reason I say it is because when we think of blockchain, we think of Bitcoin and we think of masses of energies just to actually make a simple entry. And actually, there are new technologies. And anyway, sorry, just me, just being me.
No. But you know that for Bitcoin, the main problem is the proof of work. That's 99%, but here we just have a proof of stake, so it doesn't consume that much energy, that type of blockchain. That's the way of the future. Okay, Gerard, before we wrap up, I have the pleasure of being on a panel with you. It's going to be end of February in London. It's called the Storage Summit. And for those interested in storage, it's really an event you should participate in. And we will put a link in our show notes. And I would like to thank Aquila for supporting the show.
Thank you very much, guys.
And I talk to you in 2 weeks' time.
Look forward to it.
Thank you for listening to Redefining Energy. Don't forget to rate the show and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or the platform of your choice.